Hello, everybody. Do you want some, do you? Hey, carnist scum, come on then. I'll take you on. You're listening to Vegan Talk with me, Anthony.
And me, Dominic.
And me, Carlos, scared now. Okay, welcome everybody to the show. Today we're talking about when vegans go looking for trouble, which is might be more often than you think.
Well, I mean, we've heard ant looking for trouble. What was that all about? That was excellent. That was
my very middle class attempt at asking somebody for a fight, if you don't mind, awfully.
Oh no, it was Shakespeare. That was so. What do we exactly mean by this phrase there? What do we and do we not mean by looking for trouble?
Well, I think often these things are in the eye of the beholder, and I think what is important that we make a distinction before we get going too much is obviously to some people, even being vegan is asking for trouble. It's provocation. It's, you know, starting an argument just by calling yourself vegan, just by wearing the word vegan on a hat or something like that. And I think that's not what we're talking about here. What we're referring to more is when somebody who is vegan, I think it can apply to other social justice issues too, just saying. But in our case, when somebody who is vegan is looking for a cathartic experience, is looking to do something to start an argument or to piss some people off or whatever, just to kind of make themselves feel a bit better. Or another way of looking at it is that improved outcomes for animals is not at the center of what they're doing. And I should just say as well, I am not casting any judgment there for anybody doing that. I've definitely been in that position myself where I've just wanted to rant or shout or do something. And actually, it's not been to improve outcomes for animals. That's not been the primary purpose. It's been mainly to vent. I don't know if either of you two wanted to add anything to that or question anything there.
Yeah, I definitely know what you were talking about when you mentioned the first bit before actually looking for trouble. There's a called phenomenon or something that happens in human psychology called the do-gooder derogation. Mm-hmm. I hope I said that correctly, which is when you see somebody doing something that's more virtuous than what you're doing, or that cast that person in a better, you know, more virtue, you know, like as a better ethical person than you. Humans have a tendency to then try to find fault in that person. And I'm sure we can all think of examples from that ourselves have done it or other people around us have done it. And that applies to veganism as well. You'll be eating just at a table eating with other people. You haven't told them you're vegan. They just spot you not eating the vegan option, for example.
You're eating some 3D printed vegan octopus.
Yes. and they'll just look at you and then they say, oh, are you vegan? Yes, I'm a vegan. And you haven't said anything. You didn't want to mention except to the waiter to bring in the vegan option. And somebody asks and you answer. You didn't do any propaganda, any vegan propaganda, didn't shame anybody at the table. And immediately they will say, well, I would go vegan too, but I'm anemic. Or I would go vegan too, but I try not eating meat for a day and I felt dizzy. Or, you know, they will just immediately start taking it personal. Like your mere presence there in that situation casts them in a bad light. So they need to do something about it. So I think vegans go looking for trouble, even when they're not looking for trouble. It just kind of follows them because of basic human psychology.
And I think we've got a story that popped up a couple of months ago. It actually happened 5 years ago, but it made a resurgence a couple of months ago that I think is a nice little case study of what we might hypothesize is a vegan who is looking for trouble. It's not just there, you know, people have decided, oh, you're a vegan, we're going to target you. It's somebody who really seems to be looking for a cathartic argument, I would say. Dom, do you want to give us a bit of background on this one?
Yeah, so we've got this woman, this bride, having her wedding, and she is vegan. And this vegan bride has said, we don't want to host murderers, meaning that she's given her guests the option to permanently give up animal products. So not just like take part in the vegan food at her wedding, but that's the deal, to permanently give up animal products, or not be invited. And one of the people not invited as a result of refusing to permanently give up animal products was her own mum. So that is a stance to take. To use the word murderers is a stance to take. She said, I didn't want the weight of hosting people that still kill animals on my conscience. So she's a 20-year-old person who's been on a Facebook group called Vegan Revolution to share how she uninvited any meat-eating people to her wedding. She wrote, when family tries to guilt trip you into letting them come to your fully vegan wedding, even though they are omnivores. Just for some context, some family members were told they're not invited to my wedding because we don't want to host murderers at our wedding, which is supposed to be one of the happiest days of our lives. They have consistently attacked me and my partner just for being vegan. When I broke the news to them, all I got was attacked because I don't want the weight of hosting people that still kill animals, the very beings we're trying to protect, at my wedding. She also wasn't going to allow guests to just eat vegan on the day, as I mentioned before. If they wanted to attend, it had to be a permanent choice. She said, I wouldn't feel comfortable if they went back to eating meat the next day. I'm sorry if that makes me rude or B**CH, because I'm not compromising. So, you know, of course, on social media, people are, you know, people love to comment, don't they? And loads of people have said, vegans and non-vegans have said, you know, really strong views about that. People have called her, some people have called her insane. What do we think? I've got a feeling that I'm going to defend her, and I wasn't planning on defending her when I first read this article, but having heard Ant's reaction so far, I kind of just feel like, you know, taking the opposite viewpoint just for the sake of so. I mean, we know very little about her, do we? No, and having just asked the question and then not giving you a chance to answer, I'm going to put my point of view forward, right? I think that sometimes we're just angry, aren't we? Sometimes we're just angry. And like when I was at 20, social media didn't exist. So if I kicked off at a friend and said something really big, because I was not vegan, but I was vegetarian, if I was like, well, you know, you're a murderer, I can imagine 20-year-old Dominic saying that. But it was in the moment. No one was recording it. No one was filming it. It wasn't typed somewhere to stay. So, you know, I am not 20, I'm 44, and I've got 44 years worth of experience thinking, oh, maybe I don't want stuff that I could potentially regret later because it might be taken out of context or in a way I didn't want online. So I'm really careful. If I wouldn't say it around an office desk, I don't write it online. But I didn't think that when I was 20. So maybe I did call people murderers when I was 20. I did.
I don't want to assassinate her personality for doing this at all. We all do things in the moment. Mm. We all do things we regret. I don't think that's my point. Do you nonetheless, though, Dominic, think that it was a cathartic looking for an argument stance that she's taken rather than a this is going to improve the outcome for animals? I'm not saying one's better than the other. I just think the elephant in the room, or that the thing we're discussing today, is when vegans go looking for an argument just for a cathartic release. And like, it's important to know why we do that. And like,
I'm gonna sound really like condescending now, like, you know, the wise old age of 44, I know so much more than any 20-year-old. Of course I don't. You know, I'm a poet. I say poetry to children. I genuinely believe that the young people have got worldviews that are more informed than me, that can influence me and improve my behavior. One of your fellow podcasters, you've got someone who's like 11, haven't you? Like,
Logan.
Very show. So that's amazing. So I'm not saying I know more as a 44-year-old. I'm not saying that. But I am saying, actually, maybe, possibly, it wasn't cathartic. Maybe she did, in her passion, genuinely believe that by saying, here's the ultimatum, go vegan forever, or you're not invited to my wedding.
Yeah.
That might be the thing. So maybe she was doing it for the animals, because I have given people ultimatums before. I don't think, but I have done. What do you think, Carlos?
I don't think it's very productive, but I can understand why somebody would do it. Maybe they thought it was productive. Maybe they thought it was changing things around. I'm going to be a bit of a devil's advocate now. Imagine if a side of your family was very traditional, and traditional, I mean, in the sense that they thought they could spank their kids, for example. Mm-hmm. And you say, well, I don't want these people to come to my wedding because I don't approve of spanking kids and I think it's wrong. I don't want to start a discussion on what's worse, spanking the kids or paying for animals to be tortured and slaughtered in your name. But would people feel that bad about this woman banning the child beaters from her wedding, for example?
I think people would be more understanding of it,
yeah,
wouldn't they? I mean, yeah. For me personally, I'd say, well, don't be spanking people at the wedding, but in any sense. But like, so long as you don't, then, you know, it's a celebration of, like, the wedding is not about that. I think there is an issue in this story about the narrative that society gives us, that weddings have to be perfect days and everything has to be done exactly as we want. No. It's about the family. It's about celebrating the look. Like, that I took exception to. But
well,
I think you're completely right, Carlos.
Married. I've never been married, but I've done things like I've had parties and stuff. And I don't know, I kind of, you know, as somebody who said goodbye to a fair few members of my family, not all of them, but have kind of made that decision, you know, that there are people who I wouldn't invite. And it's been because of reasons, because of like fundamental differences. I'm like, oh, we're too different. So yeah, I don't know. I'm gonna like completely switch to the opposite argument for devil's advocate, because I feel like I've been really mean to Anton. That's so lovely.
No, I love a debate.
So to just say like kind of an opposite thing that I said, I'm someone who perhaps hypocritically, as I'm enjoying being on a podcast, I kind of, the way that we're encouraged to share our views on sort of social media so much, I think that it's if, like you said, Carlos, if it's not veganism, if it was spanking or something, people do love it. I think it's fair to say it's not uncommon for people to be like, oh, here's an inflammatory thing, this will get likes, this will get attention, this will get people like looking at me. And there's an addictive quality to be like, oh wow, I've never had this many comments on my post before. And we don't know her motives, do we? We don't know. To go back to my original point of view, the fact that she does talk about her family being quite hostile to me makes me kind of think, well, yeah, you know, maybe she does have fair reason for being like, I don't want these people. But she could have said, well, I don't want you because you're mean. But then maybe she is thinking about the animals, because maybe she's using this as an opportunity to be like, well, here's the conditions, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Have you, any of you two, heard about something called the Liberation Pledge?
No.
Yeah. I tried to live by it for a little while.
Oh.
Didn't get very far, but yes.
Okay.
Go on, give some background.
What is it, Carlos?
Well, the Liberation Pledge is, I'm going to mangle the details, but it's a pledge that vegans can take, that they will not be at a place or sit at a table, mostly it's basically about sitting at a table where people are consuming animal products. And you just tell all your friends and acquaintances and family beforehand, and you say, well, if you want to invite me to something, fine, but when I sit down to have food with you or drink with you, I will not, you know, if you start having animal products, I will just leave the table because I will not tolerate that. And you can extend that from a table to, say, a party, right? Where people might be standing up with food, or, you know, it really depends the interpretation, but usually it's related to kind of sitting down. And this is, of course, this vegan wedding is much more extreme than that, but the Liberation Pledge was definitely a thing. And one of the arguments they make for the Liberation Pledge is, let's say you were at a table and people were saying racist things or homophobic things or you know, whatever you think is something that's something that people should not say or even think, for that matter. But they're having that kind of discussion, maybe telling racist jokes in front of you at the table, and you would tell them to stop, or you would just leave, right? Because you wouldn't want to be part of a group that lets these things go. And the Liberation Pledge was pretty much saying the same thing, where if sitting at a table, people are consuming animal-based products, and you're going, well, I will not tolerate this. It's, you know, my presence here shows that I'm tolerant, but I'm not. So I'm removing myself in a sort of a passive protest, in a way. And this reminded me a bit of that, but like a very extreme version of that. And Liberation Pledge by itself is quite extreme, I think. And it can definitely kind of ruin friendships and family bonds. What do you think?
You know, again, I've never heard of the Liberation Pledge, and I can really understand it. It's not what I choose to do, but I would really support someone in choosing to do that. I can remember when I first went vegan, it was a really overwhelming experience, and it temporarily just made me feel so crushed by sadness before I went and sort of found real joy in sort of finding new members of my community and being involved in action I felt were changing things. And I really remember one thing, I didn't want to sit on leather seats anymore. Like that really bothered me. That really, really bothered me. And for me, and I'm not saying anyone else needs to do the same as me, but I just have, I'm sure this is very common. What happens in my home? What happens outside my home? They're the sort of categories with which I've, you know, but I considered another way. I sort of thought, you know, well, maybe I won't ever sit on leather seats. And yeah, I think there is an argument for the vegan pledge.
I think what's helpful about something like the Liberation Pledge is it kind of gives credibility to someone's inner feelings, this feelings of like, I don't want to be about, I don't know any vegan that's kind of like, oh yeah, I love sitting around at a table when people are gnawing down on some ribs. Like, none of us want to do that. We'll all have different degrees of tolerance and resources with which we put up with things or fight things. But it kind of gives some credibility to that. So someone who's feeling a bit like, God, this is doing my head in, it kind of gives a hook to hang your hat on, sort of thing, and say, no, this is actually a stance I could take. That said, I think it's also its undoing in that I think to a non-vegan, it's, and possibly to a lot of vegans, it's going to look a bit cultish and a bit like, oh, I'm just dogmatically following this pledge rule here. Whereas actually the bottom line is we're saying, I really don't find that behavior acceptable. And it's really making me want to just leave when you do that. And you're someone I love, or you're someone who I enjoy the company of. But when you do that in front of me, I have no tolerance for it. And it's making me want to get up, or it's making me not want to sit down in the first place.
Yeah.
I'd also say it, which I'm sure, you know, you've thought of, Carlos, when you encountered it, like, you do miss the two options are, you can leave or you can argue. And actually, if we leave, we are kind of giving people the opportunity not to be argued with, really, aren't we? In that, you know, to kind of resist in a way that's saying, I really disagree with what you're doing. I guess the food example, it's, you know, are you going to have an argument with somebody every time they sit down in front of you and order an animal product? Possibly not. But I'd like to think, if, you know, the examples of racism or homophobia or transphobia, for example, if that were happening, I might not get up and leave. I might challenge it. It's going to depend on the individuals, isn't it?
I also think, no judgment, there are people who wouldn't challenge it, actually. There is the third option of saying nothing, even if, you know, I can think of a vegan couple from Germany I know who, when they come over to Britain and, you know, the guy, when he's with his girlfriend and they're very xenophobic, you know, he doesn't say things and he feels incredibly uncomfortable. And that's the choice he's made, because it's just difficult between his girlfriend and him, and he's just doing it for the sake of the relationship. And, you know, like, I am, like, really gobby me. I'm always...
Maybe I am. Let it be said.
I'm a poet, aren't I? I'm a poet. So my whole thing is I write poetry. But then that's in a certain context. Somebody goes to a poetry event, that's a little bit different to having a conversation at a meal. So for me, there's levels of challenge, isn't there? So again, it's very British, very middle class and all that. But, you know, I might say something like, well, you know, I'm not neutral on that subject.
Yeah.
So if I'm listing all my favourite things, this isn't at the top of my favourite thing. No, and again, I'm not saying I'm right, but I kind of say things with a bit of a smile on my face, which is only a hair's breadth from sort of saying nothing, because it's not going, well, let me lay some hard facts on you. But, you know, that's my stance. And I'm sure there's all kinds of complicated reasons to do with my who I am. Yeah. That's how I choose to be.
If I can ask then, it feels like we're kind of hypothesizing, could this action that this bride has taken, that there could be potential positive outcomes for animals. There could be an intention of her doing this to achieve said positive outcomes. But like, from our point of view, something like this, do we think that it is a positive thing for animals that this is happening? Or I don't want to judge her intend. Let's give her the benefit of the doubt and saying her intention is to improve things for animals. That aside, do we think it was? Because from my point of view, there seems to be a lot of upset people, random people who've seen the story online. They're not commenting favorably. Yeah. Like, it surprised me how many people are saying, do you know what? If all the food at the wedding was vegan, that would have been great. I would have been down with that. Like, it really surprised me how positive people were being about that as a moderate alternative. Yeah. But this whole thing of uninviting people, I think particularly when you've invited them in the first place, would we say that that is not a good thing for animals, ultimately?
Look, if it was me, I know all our conditions are different and our states of mind are different. I would have said, host a really well-catered vegan wedding, you know, just to spice things up. I would say, please do not bring any animal products yourself. And that, I mean, like no leather shoes, for example.
I
think that's a reasonable demand to make
because
it's your wedding. You kind of have some choice on the dress code in a fashion. And you could say, well, don't bring leather shoes. And that might get people to consider buying, you know, a non-leather belt, non-leather shoes, et cetera, et cetera, and to kind of take a chance and learn something about the possibilities and how easy or I guess accessible veganism is. But I'll tell you something about all the research that's been done on kind of converting people into veganism. You don't want to make veganism as, it needs to be serious. So you cannot be a vegan that just tolerates everything. But at the same time, you also don't want to show veganism as being this unattractive state of being, that you're always angry and militant and looking for a fight. You want veganism to be presented as something that comes out of love, which is true because you love animals and have ethical consideration towards other beings that are different from yourself, outside your own species. And following that, you want to make veganism appear like an attractive group of people to join. I mean, look at us. We actually care. We're people who are kind. We care. We want to make the world a better place for all the sentient beings. And in that sense, I think very aggressive tactics are counterproductive. Except, of course, you know, I was on another podcast, another episode talking about hunt sabbing. And that, of course, you know, it's direct action, so you're actually not looking for a fight, but looking to, you know, not be attractive to the hunters, I guess, in this sense, but attractive to the spectators, the people who then read or see the pictures or videos of what we've done. But in that sense, for example, when we go out, we never fight back. You know, somebody attacks us, we just kind of protect ourselves. But protect ourselves means not punching back, for example. Yeah, why? Yeah. Because we want to be the group that other people want to join. Not our group, our sabbing group, no, the vegan, non-speciesist, direct action group, you know, the people who care. We want to make ourselves attractive. And telling your own mom she can't come to your wedding because she's going to have to change her whole diet and approach to animal ethics, which she probably never even considered before in her life, that's not attractive. I don't think that's attractive. That is very cultish, as you said.
I think it's understandable. If you've been upset, which it seems like she's been upset by her family in the past, she's felt shunned and judged and ridiculed by her family about it. I think it's a very understandable reaction. And I want to be clear, like, I'm really not judging her for doing this or saying this if it seems to be an ineffective action. But yeah, I think I'm with you. It doesn't come across particularly well. And kind of that leads me to the next question, which would be, well, what can we do then as a community if we're, I don't think this is an isolated example of a vegan feeling pushed in a corner or marginalized or angry and lashing out in a way that is not productive for the movement. What if that is our working hypothesis, that that's what's happened and it does happen in our community? Like, is there anything we can do to help prevent it or minimize the frequency of it or minimize the action from it? Because I think my feeling is we don't want things like this to happen if possible.
I mean, on an individual level, I remember when I was like outed as a gay man when I was at school, and it was just awful. And then after a bit, some people would be like, well, I don't like the gays, but you're all right. Which was a step in the right direction.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Dominic. I've had that because when Brexit rolled around, I was living in a very heavily Brexit area, which was at Essex. And I had at least three neighbors tell me that. I don't like Europeans, but you're all right. Oh, thank you. Well, that makes me feel great.
So, you know, whilst not wanting to take the responsibility of the world on our sort of individual shoulders, I think, like, it is worth a lot to be like, oh, well, I wouldn't do that at my wedding, you know, because, you know, gays are seen as one group with one set of views. We all listen to Madonna. We all wear pink. No diversity. And vegans very, very much the same. That, you know, like, of course I've met vegans who I dislike. Of course I have. I do not feel a bad vegan to say that I'm not busy mates with everybody. I mean, again, you know, the word vegan isn't necessarily even used accurately by certain people. It's a word, you know, as it becomes more and more in the mainstream, there's greater opportunity for people to misuse the word. So I think that people do look to us to be like, oh, so what do you think? And I think that's one thing we can do, just be like, oh, well, I wouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm. What would you do, Carlos, if say you had a friend who was vegan and sort of either had done this or was thinking of doing this? Like, is there a role for you there, do you think?
Oh, I think I would probably, as a friend, I would just ask them why they're doing it. And if it's something, well, if it's something they feel really strongly about, it's their wedding. So, you know, you either show up or don't. You either show up or don't in case you're even allowed to go. but assuming, because I'm vegan, I'd be allowed to go to his wedding or their wedding. And I would advise them against it. I would do exactly, say exactly the same argument I said. You know, I think it's best for the non-vegans if you just make the proposition of turning vegan really attractive, but true, you know, don't sugarcoat it. Don't say, yeah, it's a vegan wedding, but you know, we'll have some actual cheese because there are a few cheeses that we can't get done vegan very well these days. So we're still going to have those. No, don't make compromises on the vegan position, but do make us, I guess, our group, our ethical position or ethical code, do you know, I think it's more productive if you do make it somehow attractive to join, like a positive, joyful thing.
I think something that I feel, and I'm going to make some assumptions here, so I'm very happy to be challenged on those by either of you or any listeners who want to email in. I feel like this is an act of somebody who feels overwhelmed and is lashing out a little bit. There's stories that we've covered in previous episodes. I think possibly episode 3 was called something like When Vegans Go Too Far. And that was somebody lashing out at her neighbor. And it was along vegan lines, or the fact that she was vegan got dragged into it. And I feel like as a community, if indeed we are a community, or if indeed you just know somebody who is vegan, knowing that being vegan in a non-vegan world can be difficult, and therefore everybody has the potential to reach the edge sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I think if we can be looking out for that with our vegan community, and you know what, it's probably good to just look out for all fellow humans, you know, if someone's looking like they're low resourced and getting close to the edge. But just from a vegan perspective, if you're paying attention to people that you spend time with, you're going to notice, or there's going to be a reasonable chance that you notice that someone's looking a bit worn down or getting a bit stressed out by things. And it might be that you can catch something before it happens. And I don't want to say that we've all got a responsibility for everyone else's actions. I don't believe that. But actually, maybe something like this could have been prevented if this bride felt a bit more listened to by somebody in her life. And I'm not judging, I'm not blaming, I'm not putting the finger, but wouldn't it be good if, you know, something like that could be prevented by just someone noticing something or saying, gosh, you seem really stressed at the minute by this, or that can't have been nice when your mum completely took the piss out of your veganism in front of the rest of the family. That must have really sucked. Like, I've heard goes a long way.
Or just to get the number of different stances I've taken in this podcast, like so many. But like,
are you looking for an argument, Dominic?
Yeah, we've only heard from her that the mum's been awful. Like, we don't know that that's true, that the mum's been awful. And you know what? Like, maybe we're being far too kind. Maybe she is weaponizing her view of veganism just as an excuse to kick off and just as an excuse to be mean. And maybe she is saying something. And maybe no amount of, like, talking her down would have, because, you know, some people surpass that point. I know what it's like to lose my temper. I know what it's like to say things that I regret. I know what it's like to, in the moment, just go, bleh. But there's that. And then a very different thing is when you are, like, fueled by vengeance, fueled by not vegan vengeance, but fueled by, like, personal grievance and, like, yeah, I'm going to use this as a weapon. And it is more than possible that this woman who is vegan has hijacked veganism just as an excuse to do something to upset people. That's not an impossibility.
Yeah, and if indeed that is the case, let's put this woman out of it. But, like, I would be astounded if that does not happen in the world in some instances. I'm pretty sure I've seen it in a few instances. But, like, that, I think, as a community, we really have to try and prevent, avoid. I don't want to say come down on hard, because I don't know that I necessarily believe that. But, like, the victims there are the animals. Like, that's what we've got to remember. If our movement is, in even just a tiny way, hijacked by people who just want to cathartically, you know, like you say, Dominic, seek vengeance on the next door neighbor they don't like or whatever. Like, no, you don't get to use this social justice movement for that. You don't get to, you know, that because it's the animals who are suffering there, and that's just not on.
I agree. It takes two to get married, as far as I know, or more. I mean, maybe more, but let's say at least two people need to get married. And we heard nothing about the other side of this, which might have shed some light. Who knows? This all came from a social media post. No, not a lot of, you know, proof or, you know, not a lot of reporting, let's say, of interviewing all the parties affected and getting their statements. So, but it's a good topic for discussion, isn't it?
Yeah.
It really grabs the headlines.
I'm going to make an assumption that their partner in marriage is just cringing in a corner somewhere going, oh, God, please, no.
Of course, the funny twist is if they're not vegan and then they can't even show up to their marriage ceremony. They just sign the papers and not show up.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah.
Maybe that's what it was for. It was a desperate way of getting out of a toxic relationship. Yeah. And this was the only way they could think of. Anyway, I think with that fun hypothetical, that might be a hint that we need to bring the conversation to an end. Thank you, everyone, for listening to today's discussion. We are very keen to hear what you think. Maybe you know this family. Maybe you've got more insight, but possibly more important than that, because we're not just here for salacious gossip. In fact, we're definitely not here for salacious gossip. If you've got thoughts on just in general, sort of the whole notion of cathartically venting and how acceptable that is in our movement or not. We'd love to know what you think. enoughofthefalafel@gmail.com is our email address.
Well, thanks everybody for listening and tuning in. May I remind you that we have an extensive back catalog and other types of shows at Enough of the Falafel. We've had vegan stories about how people have turned vegan, and we discuss this. We do kind of a roundup of vegan news for the week as well as this sort of discussion. So please check our back catalog and, you know, subscribe, tune up, you know, whatever sends you a notification to tell you there's a new podcast, please click that button. And thank you very much for listening.
Okay, everyone. So heads up, the next episode of Vegan Week will be airing on Monday. That will be featuring Ant, Kate and Julie, looking at one theme in particular that's been reported a lot lately. Has the vegan bubble burst?
Before we sign off, there's two things to come up. one of which is an outstanding poem from Dominic. But also, Carlos, do you want to just give a shout out for your podcast? Because I've been really enjoying listening to it at the minute. And I think our listeners would too. Do you want to have a little elevator pitch?
Yes, I have a podcast called Vegan Voidcast, which is, it is run by two vegans. And we do talk about some vegan topics, but mostly it's about philosophy. I don't think it's a very entertaining podcast, but we do.
Hey, I enjoy it. I enjoy it.
I'm glad you do. We try to go deep on some topics. We had an episode about human extinction, so it's not the cheeriest of subjects. Maybe for some animals it will be the cheeriest of subjects. But they don't listen to podcasts. So it's vegan. It's Vegan Voidcast. If you Google, just this everything together Vegan Voidcast, you'll find us, and I run it with my pal who's also a vegan, Lenny.
Awesome. Yeah, and we'll put a link in the show notes so people who just want to click can do so too. Anyway, we have just got enough time now then for a spoken poem from Dominic, but other than that though, that is enough of the falafel for this episode. I have been Anthony.
I've been Carlos.
I've been Dominic. You have been listening to Vegan Talk. And my poem, cheers for having me say a poem. It was really difficult when I came out as gay. That was a horrible thing. But this is a poem about when I said, I'm coming out as vegan. Although maybe not today. I'm afraid. Don't single me out from the pack. Anything but that. I'd love to be an ace, a king, a jack, the lad, rugged and mean. But no, I know. I am a celery munching queen, a sappy, soppy fruit. I can't change the hand I've been dealt. It's limp as watercress. I confess I ravish radishes, crave Brussels sprout, but I'm a closet vegan and I'm not coming out. Oh, I've tried to be like those beef stocky guys raised on pork pies. Tell me I'm normal, I'll sacrifice any lamb if you tell me I am one of the gang and not a gooseberry, anything but that. And so my queer desires I keep under lettuce wraps. But like any iceberg, most of me's concealed. I secretly savour celeriac, prefer asparagus to veal. The only blood I sucks from orange, it sends me to nirvana. In my bedroom under quilt, unpeeling my banana. And then I chew over a new thought, teeth slowly grind. All this mastication almost made me blind. It's here, clear. It's like lemon zest. This cucumber coolness washes away all bitterness. Tear up my cards, grind them to pulp, and gulp down fear with a sip of peppermint tea. Switch on the internet. Pull up my trousers. Google vegan men and find they are not all big girls' blouses. Although, I am. Yes, check that mirror. What a peachy fella. This pumpkin's turned into Cinderella. No feeble side salad. I am the main dish. Golden delish. Right to my core. Olive skin full of beans. Coming out and proud. Show those porkers I've got. Nuts! Why did I ever want to be part of that cold, carnivorous crowd? I mean, real men or chickens gouging gravied pie? The truth, like onions, would make most those lily-livered boys cry. They are as macho as nachos. Strong, virile, quick. How many of those real men could break the neck of a little chick or take a calf away from its mother or clip out a piglet's teeth? Maybe those real men are icebergs too, their truth hidden beneath. overcome conditioning. There's an inner voice. I think it's normal to be caring. Don't think compassion's a choice. I think it's part of who I am, like love, like sex, like skin. And this one small step took me so far. Swap foie gras for Mardi Gras. My new taste buddies cheer, hurrah, and let the party in. Want the world to know, gotta let it show. I'm coming. Pop my cherry. Dance and shout. Yes, I am vegan. I have come out.